The Real Skinny on Good Nutrition. There's a new headline every day. Eggs are good for you. Eggs are bad for you. After decades of conflicting and downright confusing findings, many Americans have come to believe that nutritional studies themselves are bad for us. But there is some relatively common ground on what will improve and preserve our health. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we explore the factors that we can control, such as diet and exercise, and those we cannot, such as genetics. We'll also look at factors that may seem at times like they're out of our control, such as stress and the environment. With me in our Portland studio, Dan Netto, MD, Director of the Diabetes Program at York Hospital. And from Bangor, Dr. Michael Noonan, who practices chiropractic, acupuncture, and other therapies in Old Town. Some help for those adrift in a sea of health studies. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by Now You're Cooking, purveyors of kitchen tools, gadgets, cookware, and fine wine for over 10 years on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. As I prepared my son's breakfast this morning, generating cortisol in my system brought on by the stress of exposing him to omega-6 fatty acids, I heard a news tease about a study that has linked a byproduct of certain bacteria found in the gut to an increased risk of heart disease. The study, published yesterday in the New England Journal of Medicine, indicates a digestive process involving lecithin, which is abundant in egg yolks. 2 weeks ago, investigators reported that carnitine, a compound found in red meat, sparks activity of bacteria, which can also increase heart disease. Then I read, just before air, that another study by scientists at the University of Coventry, England, suggests that celebrity TV chefs may be, in fact, contributing to the obesity epidemic by pushing unhealthy recipes. Dr. Dan Netto, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Is this task, against the sea of studies and news reports, really that confusing, or is it, in fact, quite simple?
Well, I think in some ways it is quite simple. You know, God has done the big, definitive, controlled study. And I think what it points to is that a plant-based diet, high in fruits and vegetables and legumes, and low in processed food and saturated fat, is the healthiest diet that we can have. Most people actually will be going through about 7 different recipes each dinner time that comes along. And one of the things that people can do is to simply start to incorporate healthy recipes into those meals that they're having every night. And before long, they're really changing their whole environment. I think the studies that you mentioned are interesting. I mean, to me, nutrition, there's so many different trials out there. One of the things is these studies kind of point more towards, well, eat more of a plant-based diet. I tend to agree with those studies. Other people may find other studies that point to kind of a different conclusion. But you're right. There's a lot of different studies out there.
And we should say at the top that you are a vegan.
Yeah, more or less. A little fish once in a while, but pretty much vegan otherwise at home, certainly.
And why is that? What's...
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think there's philosophical reasons. There's ecological reasons. There's health reasons. There's humanistic reasons. There's reasons that, you know, people just don't want to eat a lot of animals because there's pain and suffering involved. There's a lot of different reasons, I think, to consider more of a plant-based diet. I think at some point we have to kind of recognize the ramifications of what we're eating in terms of everything from global warming to how our heart is functioning. And, you know, as I think if we look at the broad perspective, it does point towards a move towards more of a healthy plant-based diet as being something that's going to carry not only us but actually civilization into a healthier future.
Dr. Michael Noonan, welcome to Maine Calling. You're speaking to us from our Bangor studios.
Mm-hmm.
And you're
thanks for having me.
You are a doctor of chiropractic. You are not a vegan. I think I read recently in one of your columns that the gist was that a little red meat isn't bad for you. What's your take on, this latest round of studies, pointing the finger at red meat and eggs.
My take on that is wait a year or two. They'll come out with a completely different conclusion. When I was reading that article just this morning, or some of the write-up on it, and I had to laugh because one of the lead researchers said exactly the opposite of what they've been saying for the past, I don't know, 10, 20 years. Gee, maybe cholesterol isn't a factor after all. There is a whole system set up around our lowering cholesterol. Statins are some of the most common drugs taken. I have patients who, you know, the number of the level of cholesterol in the blood that's considered normal is dropping and dropping. I have patients on cholesterol meds, and their cholesterol is like 170. And now they're probably, and I was taught years ago that the cholesterol is just not a problem. A lot of these health issues are kind of faddish. So, you know, my advice on that is, like with a lot of the studies, wait a couple of years, something different will come along, or there'll be a different perspective. When it comes to eating meat, my issue is quality. When you look at the meats available in the supermarket, they are totally different from the meats that people ate, let's say, 100 years ago. They're from cows that are fed grains rather than allowed to eat grass, and the same with the chicken and even with the fish. What they call the factory-farmed meat, the quality of it, the fat content, the makeup of the fat, you know, the omega-6, omega-3 balance that you referenced earlier, is totally different. So I definitely emphasize grass-fed, free-range, you know, a more natural source of the meat.
Some have even pointed the finger at this nation's dependence upon corn and other plant-based ingredients that is in a lot of processed foods as a culprit for, you know, obesity, heart disease, these chronic diseases. Do Dr. Nadeau, is there a potential that there is a link between this?
Sure. I think when you process foods, like you take corn and you turn it into high fructose corn syrup, I think then you're talking about something that's, you know, potentially dangerous, super concentrated, highly processed. I think if we get back to more whole grains, then, you know, people do well. If you look, for example, there are Pima Indians who live in Arizona have incidence rates of diabetes of 60 and 70%. They're people with the exact same genetic heritage living in Mexico, eating beans and whole corn and vegetables, virtually have no type 2 diabetes in their population. So I think to just say, well, just don't eat corn is a mistake. You know, every civilization that has ever come and gone, if you think about the Japanese civilization, the Indian civilization, the African civilization, they've all had grain-based diets. So they've either had corn, they've had millet, they've had wheat, they've had, you know, some kind of a whole grain as being the center of their diet. And really, you know, you look to Aboriginal Chinese populations, you know, they'll have a total cholesterol of 128 and virtually no heart disease, no obesity, no hypertension. They basically just don't suffer the same diseases that we here in the West suffer from.
Yeah. Dr. Noonan, you were saying earlier that that it's the quality of meat, not meat itself, that is a bigger factor in dietary health. What are some of your other beliefs in terms of the mix of foods that you should have and those that you should avoid?
Really, I emphasize more than the mix. I mean, you know, we need foods from all different sources. But the big two that I stress with patients are meat and vegetables. Most of my patients are flooded with grains. They eat way too many grains. And there's a second issue here, too. When we talk about the quality of the food, the grains that we eat today are genetically completely different from the grains that we ate even 100 years ago. They've been crossbred and backbred. And, to be honest, one of the first dietary recommendations I make to patients is to eliminate wheat from their diet, not just because wheat is, you know, a carb-heavy food, but because I see so many patients, myself included, who see all kinds of other improvements in their health when they get away from the wheat. I'm talking hormonal imbalances, depression, really dramatic weight loss. With me, it was sleep apnea. I went through all the medical procedures. I had my nose roto-rooted, everything. Nothing really made a difference. I got off the wheat. Now, if I go to what they call a heritage wheat, it doesn't bother me in the same way.
Well, I was going to say, there's a big difference between, not to kick on poor old Wonder Bread, the late great Wonder Bread, but isn't there a difference between, you know, processed white bread, you know, hot dog rolls and that sort of thing versus a more whole-grained bread, are you saying?
Not in this regard. There is a huge difference in terms of the processing. Absolutely. The more, like Dr. Nadeau said, the more you process a food, the more you reduce its nutritional value. But that processing apparently also applies to the genetics. When you look at the ancient wheats that civilization was based on, those are what they call diploid wheats. Their genetic makeup is like ours. They've got a double genetic code. When you look at the wheats that we're eating today, it's called hexaploid. It has a total of six genetic backup code, or a total of six codes within it. It's been so genetically manipulated, it can't even survive on its own. You take a strain of modern-day wheat and plant it out in the wild, and it can't survive without being farmed. It's totally different.
I notice, personal note sharing here, if I have a sandwich on a white bread, my son likes white bread, you know, that's mm-hmm. what he likes. We try to keep it away from him, but he likes it. We give it to him once in a while. If I have a sandwich with white bread, I suddenly feel incredibly tired. Dr. Nadeau, what's going on there?
Well, white bread, turns out it's absorbed as quickly as sugar. It's like if you just took white sugar, it's actually white bread is absorbed more quickly than that. So you get a big surge in your glucose level. Your pancreas overreacts. It sends a surge of insulin, and then it causes a hypoglycemic response. And there are some people who just kind of feel these big surges and then these crashes all day long from eating a kind of a standard American diet. They're having a croissant for breakfast. They're having white bread for lunch. They're having something sweet, you know, with their next meal. And so suddenly their blood sugars are going up and down, you know, up and then crashing all day long. So that tends to create this cycle of really feeling fatigue, like you're saying. So that's, I think, one reason why to incorporate the whole grains and as opposed to the processed white flour.
Join the conversation. The number to join this conversation, 1-800-399-3566. The number again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about health and nutrition today. We'll return to foods, and I'm sure talk about that over the course of the program. But referencing something that we, as I mentioned earlier, we think we can't control, but can, and that is stress. What role, Dr. Nadeau, do you think stress plays in contributing to these major chronic illnesses, including heart disease?
Oh, I think it does play a role. I mean, certainly, I mean, I see a lot of people with diabetes who will have uncontrolled, when one of their, somebody in their family dies, for example, they'll feel a lot of stress, or they're having financial stress, and their blood sugars tend to go up. And you can see it. You know, it's a cortisol surge. They'll tend to, have it reflected in, you know, how they're feeling. So certainly, I think stress does play a role. I mean, certainly a lot of people now are just feeling just tremendous stress from the economy and so on. And to try and control that stress as much as possible, I think, is very helpful to help to achieve optimal health.
Exercise is one way to do that.
That's an excellent point. When I did surgery, it was one of the most stressful experiences of my life. And every night, the way I handled the stress was to go out for a run, you know, and just kind of could feel the stress kind of falling off me with the run. And it's much better than reaching for a ding-dong or some other high processed food. Do something when you're feeling stressed that's going to, in the long term, be good for you, and you'll really have the payoff in the end.
And Dr. Noonan, we'll talk to you about stress and how you help your patients deal with that. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments, the number again, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
This week on Maine Watch, should all genetically modified food be labeled as such? A bill before the Maine legislature would require just that. Supporters say people have the right to know what they're eating. Opponents worry that the bill could hurt Maine farmers. Plus, we'll learn about growing efforts to restore streams and the fish in them by replacing poorly functioning culverts. We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
And you can join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8, tomorrow at 9 on MPBN Television, or tune in tomorrow at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio.
On the next Living on Earth, what's possible if we could only store renewable energy?
My utopian view here is for every home in suburban America and Canada not to be connected to the grid in any way.
A new way to make that dream come true. I'm Steve Hurwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tune in for Living on Earth Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Portland Ovations, presenting the Wind Quintet Imani Winds on Thursday, May 2nd at USM's Hannaford Hall, portlandovations.org, and by Endicott Home Furnishings in Scarborough, specializing in furnishings designed to fit well in smaller places, online at condofurniture.com.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, health, nutrition, and your questions about the latest news on eating right. With me in the studio, Dr. Dan Netto, director of the diabetes program at York Hospital. He's co-author of The Color Code, a revolutionary eating plan for optimum health. He's also at work on a new book about the benefits of the all-vegan diet. On the line with us from our Bangor studio, Dr. Michael Noonan. He practices chiropractic, acupuncture, and other wellness therapies in Old Town and writes a column for the Bangor Daily News. We'd like you to join the conversation. Do you know someone with a health issue? Maybe it's you, or just a question about nutrition. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Noonan, I wanted to get back to you on this question of stress and how it can be controlled. Dr. Netto suggested exercise, good advice. What are some other options that are within the control of some of your patients to reduce stress in their lives?
Oh, the first thing is eat a good diet. You know, like Dr. Netto mentioned earlier, if your blood sugar is going up and down and up and down all day because you're eating refined carbs, you're not going to be able to handle the stress. Any small stress is going to seem huge to you. So if you have a heavier protein and fat, heavier diet, you're not going to be as reactive. It's you know, I use a comparison, and a lot of people in Maine will relate to this. You don't want to run your wood stove on kindling all day. It just doesn't work. The other thing, of course, you know, is exercise. If it's a real chronic problem, I have found acupuncture real helpful for that.
So, and how many patients do you treat for stress with acupuncture, would you say?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's not something that people come in for initially. A lot of times it's something we begin to address. Most of my patients start with me because of pain. Mm-hmm. And then once we deal with their pain, then we look at their other issues, whether it's digestive, stress, you know, whatever. And typically what I find is almost everybody needs improvement in all areas of their lives. You know, they need to control their stress. They need to eat better. They need to, you know, have better energy balance. They need to just have less pain in their lives.
Hard to do for people who feel besieged by what's happening to them from the outside. Anyway, we'll start to take some calls to Waterville and Eve. Hi, Eve. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
This is Ev Beliveau. I'm a registered dietitian at Inland Hospital and the director of diabetes and nutrition. Appreciating some of the comments and piping in as for you know, collaboration of total health, as Dr. Netto and Dr. Noonan. And just to say, don't forget your registered dietitians, who our entire career is spent in schooling on the food and nutrition. So,
I'm guessing this is an increasingly important role in healthcare services.
Yeah, dietitians play a big role in terms of helping people to move towards a healthier diet, and I think they're well trained and they provide a lot of insight and guidance for people. I have been around. I've spoken a lot to a lot of State Dietetic Association through the years talking about my book and the importance of color. And I find that with dietitians, I think they have an amazing role, but they should realize that their role is so important. I mean, we keep throwing medications at people and such, but it's amazing what people can do by simply changing their diet. If they're having problems with obesity, if they're having trouble with cholesterol, blood pressure, eating more fruits and vegetables is important. And every meal counts. Like what I do each morning is a big blueberry smoothie made with wild Maine blueberries and almond milk, and I throw in some healthy vegan proteins. It's a great way to start the day. And I think, you know, working with a dietitian, you too can come up with a plan that incorporates healthy foods at every meal and start one meal at a time and make it as healthy as you can and avoid, you know, meals that just aren't good for you, that are going to bring you down, that are going to cause you to crash in a few hours.
To Unity Plantation and David. Hi, David.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I'd like to have a little discussion about milk. You know, it's a big part of the Maine economy here, and, you know, raw milk versus pasteurized, homogenized versus unhomogenized. Is it good for little kids or not good for older folks? Just a little bit of discussion on that.
Okay. Dr. Nader, you want to go first?
Well, that's one of my pet peeves. I'm very much against adult humans drinking milk. I think milk is a food that nature designed for baby cows. If you were driving down the road and you saw some guy with his head stuck underneath a cow drinking the milk of a cow, you'd say, you know what, that's really odd behavior. You know, there's no other mammal on earth that drinks milk into adulthood. And, you know, milk is designed to bring a cow from 80 pounds to 700 pounds in the course of a year. And the idea that we're going to drink milk, and especially concentrated milk in the form of cheese, I think it has – my own view is that a lot of people have allergies to milk that they don't recognize, and they can live a lot healthier life if they simply avoid milk. It just has too many calories.
Now, our pediatrician has recommended for our kids milk and other dairy products with a certain amount of fat in that for them. And we've heard this from other you know, that it's important for their diet as well. These sources could be elsewhere, perhaps, other than milk. But we've been sort of told, hey, you know, it's important. So there's a conflict between within the medical community about dairy products is what I'm saying.
Right. Well, I think it's up to you to try. If you're having problems with if you're a teenager, you're having problems with acne, or you're having problems controlling your weight, you know, try drinking water instead of milk and try to eliminate cheese from your diet. And what I find, a lot of people simply by eliminating cheese are able to take off those unwanted pounds very, very readily, actually. Yeah. So we have been told, you know, by USDA and by, you know, people interested in promoting the consumption of dairy products that it's part of the four food groups and we have to have it every day. If you look back at the history behind that, I think you'll find that it's really kind of more a political thing, motivated more by financial stuff as opposed to really being healthy.
I once lost about 30 pounds very quickly by cutting out only dairy products.
There you go.
But I tried it again after I went back on dairy products, and it had no effect at all. Is that my body saying you can trick me once, but you can't do it again? Or?
Well, I mean, who knows? You may have just found something else that you incorporated that had similar calories. I mean, still, it's all, you know, physics and energy in versus energy out kind of thing. But I have found that it does have a lot of calories, and people do have reactions to milk. And so you have to experiment.
It also has vitamin D that we need.
Well, it has a minimal amount of vitamin D. It has 100 international units per quart, which barely prevents rickets. I mean, here in Maine, people need to take 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 IUs of vitamin D each day to keep levels healthy. And the amount that's in milk is insignificant.
And that's
really
because of the lack of sunlight over the course.
Yeah,
of
because we here in Maine, we can't make vitamin D from fall till spring.
Dr. Noonan, what's your take on dairy?
Largely the same. You know, dairy is a perfect food for baby cows. And I have a number of patients who, in fact, one of my sons is quite intolerant to milk. The principles apply, you know, the basic principles. I am actually, again, I'm not a big proponent of milk, but I would definitely, in terms of the nutritional value of the milk, recommend raw over pasteurized. I would recommend yogurt over, you know, just the pure cow's milk, because it's, I think, where it's been, in a sense, digested once, it's going to be easier on you. Yeah. But, you know, by and large, you know, it's adults. Just because we've adapted to where we can digest milk doesn't mean it's good for us.
David, does that help answer any questions?
Yeah, that was helpful. Thank you.
All right. Let's go now to Stonington and Larry. Hi, Larry.
No, it's Laurie.
Laurie, sorry.
That's all right. I have a question. It's been much on my mind lately because my stepmother recently died, and in her 80s, but I believe she died of malnutrition. And to explain, I guess about 7 years ago she had a stroke, and ever since then she's been on more and more and more pharmaceuticals, I think probably 15, 16 in the past several years. And really, she became skeletal. She couldn't digest anything. I'm sure she, from what I read, these medications really interfere in nutritional absorption of all kinds. And I just despair of all the drugs people are taking. And I don't see that physicians advise people about what it's doing to them nutritionally, among other things.
Yeah, let's ask Dr. Dedeau. Obviously, there are many different drugs with many different effects. It's hard to lump them all together as pharmaceuticals. But isn't also, the malnutrition issue in aging people can be a complicated matter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what people sometimes don't realize is, you know, staying very active is very helpful, and to exercise and to go to the gym and try to work out and maintain your strength. A lot of people end up in nursing homes, not so much because they have some serious illness, but because they just don't have the strength to do the activities of daily living. So I think to maintain your strength throughout your life and to, you know, do an hour of exercise every day is what we should all be striving to do. I think as far as, you know, it's hard for me to know exactly what meds she was taking. I mean, certainly meds that are sedating will have a, you know, reduce the food intake. I think it is important to eat foods that, you know, do have a lot of nutrition involved and that aren't so processed and so on. But trying to get, you know, healthy foods at every meal. Sometimes, in that case, it may be helpful for her to have higher fat foods and fats that are easily absorbed, like medium chain triglycerides that are found in coconut oil and such might be something.
What about the projects like Ensure?
Yeah, sure. I think they do have quite a lot of sugar in them. I think that they can be used for a short time to help boost the energy. I'm kind of a health food nut, as you may be picking up here. But avocados actually are high in calories. They have a lot of nutrition. And I remember talking to a British dietitian one time about what she would use in her AIDS patients who were losing a lot of weight. And she found that avocados were awesome for them. And, you know, what tastes better than guacamole? I mean, to me, guacamole is one of the best tasting foods there is, and it can give you a lot of calories and a lot of great nutrition.
Dr. Noonan, anything to add?
One of the things I've found is that there are natural alternatives for so many meds. I remember when I was new in practice, one of my patients brought an elderly relative who'd had compression fractures. Well, as a chiropractor, that's not something I was able to treat at that time. A few years later, after I got certified as an acupuncturist, a patient brought me his elderly father. We did acupuncture on him, and the difference was phenomenal. He was able to get off all of his meds. He was active, you know. There are natural alternatives, because what you tend to see is they call it the prescribing cascade. A patient is given a medication, let's say, for chronic pain. Well, that can irritate the stomach. That will diminish your appetite. Well, they give them a medication to help with that, you know, maybe a Prilosec or something like that. But they just, you know, you get another medication, the patient just doesn't feel well. They don't feel like getting out and exercise. They don't feel even like bothering to cook a healthy meal, as opposed to just grabbing something prepared. So what, you know, we try to get patients, help them naturally as much as we can to, first of all, avoid that prescribing cascade, and secondly, sometimes help them get off a medication naturally.
All right, 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We'll go back to the phones in a moment, though. First, a short break, and when we come back, we want to hear from you. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Stay with us.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's critical issues. Yes or no to this statement? Abolish the minimum wage.
Abolishing the minimum wage would be a terrible policy mistake that would needlessly hurt millions of low-wage workers.
The minimum wage is neither necessary nor sufficient for prosperity. What prosperity requires is opportunities. The minimum wage destroys opportunities.
You can hear that debate this afternoon at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling.
On the next Fresh Air, Mad Men. I've been watching this season, and I have so many questions about what's happening to Don Draper and Megan and Don Draper's new mistress. I just got to pose those questions to the creator of Mad Men, Matthew Weiner. We'll feature that interview with Matthew Weiner on the next Fresh Air.
Join us for Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about health and nutrition. With me in studio, Dr. Dan Netto, director of the diabetes program at York Hospital. On the line with us from Bangor, Dr. Michael Noonan. He's a chiropractor who works in Old Town. Join the conversation. What questions do you have about what you eat or how you live? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We have an email from Claire who asks, please ask the guests what their opinion is about taking high-quality supplements, balanced vitamins and minerals, to add nutrients to their diets. Dr. Noonan, we'll start with you.
Boy, that's a complicated question. When the operative word here is high quality, that pretty much excludes anything you're going to buy at the store. When you look at the supplements that are available today, here's an interesting fact. They are required to be, like when you buy a thiamine supplement, it is required to have the same chemical composition as natural thiamine. But it doesn't have to be in the exact same configuration. A lot of the vitamins today are not even made from food sources. So I actually recommend against using a lot of the vitamins today. Not that there's no benefit to them, I'm not saying that, but they're not what people think they are. They're not from food sources at all.
So where would you turn then for supplements?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a brand that I use at my office. They only work with healthcare providers. They don't sell to the public. But to be honest, I don't know of any brands that sell. The company that I use, what they do is their vitamin C complex will have food sources of vitamin C concentrated so that when you bite into it, it tastes like, you know, the food source that it's from. The same with all of their supplements. Mm.
Dr. Netto, what's your take on over-the-counter supplements?
Well, you know, generally speaking, I think it probably is good to try to find a healthier multivitamin, I would recommend a multivitamin every day. I mean, there's one company in New Hampshire called Mega Foods, and they make an effort to source from food sources, and they're relatively affordable. But generally, I think a multivitamin helps to ensure that you're getting, you know, the B12 and so on. I think vitamin D supplements, I mean, in a multivitamin, you'll only get about 400 IUs of vitamin D. I recommend people take about 2,000 IUs a day of vitamin D. There's a study in Finland, for example, where they looked at people at high risk for developing type 1 diabetes. They gave them 2,000 IUs of vitamin D per day. They reduced the risk of their developing type 1 diabetes by 88% over the course of 38 years. And so vitamin D has a lot of different effects, maybe in reducing cancer risk, of course, protecting the bone, maybe even helping to fight colds and so on. And we can't make vitamin D. During evolution, we had a lot of sun exposure. Our skin wasn't covered. We really, you know, had healthy levels of vitamin D. Now we've moved to the north. We're covered all year. We live so far north that we can't make vitamin D from fall till spring. So,
and we're trying to avoid overexposure to sun
exactly,
because of melanoma and other skin cancers.
And that's been a source of contention, dermatologists fighting with vitamin D experts about that. And it's kind of hard to get calcium if you stay away from dairy products, for example, to get calcium in your diet. 600 milligrams of calcium may not be a bad idea. I mean, there's some of the, like almond milk, for example, has 1.5 times more calcium than
The calcium fortified orange juice?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to incorporate into your diet. It's easy to do. It doesn't taste great. It's a nice, easy thing to do. So I do support the idea of a multivitamin, vitamin D, and a small amount of calcium.
Let's go to, I believe it's Naples. Is it Naples, Sally?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. How healthy do you consider sourdough bread? For example, more likely to stabilize blood sugar?
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, it depends if it's really whole grain as opposed to white flour. If it's a white flour sourdough, I just stay away from it. White flour is white flour is white flour. So if you can get a whole grain sourdough bread, then I would say, sure, I'd be all for it. Whereas the white sourdough, I would just pretty much avoid myself.
All right. So,
and
yes, go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
Just to chime in here, I personally don't eat any gluten, and any of the any of the doughs that are from wheat are going to have gluten in them, and especially the modern day wheat that's available now that's so genetically modified, so genetically different from the ancient wheats. So, to me, again, one of the biggest dietary recommendations I make to patients is just to avoid wheat as a class of food.
All right, let's go now to Cumberland and Maria. Hi, Maria.
Yes, hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Somebody I know was diagnosed with fatty liver or was told they had fatty liver. And this person eats very well, has a pretty healthy diet, drinks very little, maybe one glass of wine a day. And not overweight, no cholesterol, high blood pressure under control with very little medication. What can that person do diet-wise to change that?
Yeah, and Maria, I apologize, your phone's a little weak, but we did hear you. Dr. Nedo, fatty liver usually associated with, alcoholism is one issue,
right,
but she's saying that that's not a factor. Any thoughts?
Well, I'd be curious as to how it was diagnosed. I mean, liver function tests can go up with almost anything. One glass of wine will knock liver function tests up. If it's simply based on that, then I'd question the diagnosis because the person does seem like they're pretty healthy. I think of fatty livers occurring in people with diabetes and eating a lot of simple, refined carbohydrates and such where they quickly turn into fat and it kind of accumulates in the liver. I think simply avoiding processed food would be the place to start. And then if it's really a concern, I think that, more definitive testing through actually looking at the liver with, a CT and seeing if there's any real evidence of truly fatty liver, more than just a slight elevation of liver function test would be, another step to take if it's really a concern.
Dr. Noonan?
One of the things that I found to be real helpful is a food diary. So I say to the patient, before you come in, write down everything you eat for 3 days. It's so interesting to me. When I first started with this, I'd ask the patient, how's your diet? And most of them said, great. And then they bring the food diaries in. And it's like, well, maybe it's not so great. So, that's something that you have to look at. Another thing that's common that I see a lot of is food sensitivities. Again, I happen to be sensitive to gluten. I have patients that are sensitive to all different kinds of things, and not necessarily to the degree of like an allergy, but just something that they're sensitive to.
Speaking of which, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Speaking of salt is another issue. Salt sensitivity is. What's your take, Dr. Nedo, on salt for anyone?
Well, I think salt. We should try to not take too much salt, and I think there are people who are salt sensitive. who take small amounts of salt and they do actually have their blood pressure go up. I mean, there may be some, healthy young people who can incorporate a little more salt than others and not have any – it translated and it increases in blood pressure.
If you're exercising a lot or just because of your age?
Well, because they're slender and they're young and such, they may not have an increase in blood pressure from taking salt in. But generally speaking, I think to try to limit salt to, under 2 grams per day is probably a healthy thing. And, certainly in the U.S. we eat way too much salt. We have potato chips. We have french fries. We have things that are just giving us huge amounts of salt. And I think that's, very dangerous. Those are generally foods that we should try to avoid anyway. I think if we can do that, we'll be doing ourselves a big favor. The other thing to avoid, if you see something that's that says trans fats, partially hydrogenated fats, hydrogenated fat, you just want to avoid those like the plague. They're very
bad for
you.
Those are things that appeared in cookies and muffins and a lot of processed snack
right.
foods.
And that, you know, if you shop more at, you know, natural food store and stuff, you can find things that say no trans fats. And you want to avoid sure. anything that's called hydrogenated fats, because I think there's no amount that's considered safe in the yeah. diet.
We've got about a minute left. If there's one takeaway you want listeners to take from this show, Dr. Michael Noonan, what would it be in 30 seconds?
I heard the reference to the GMO bill. I am a big proponent of labeling GMOs.
And that's a bill that's before the legislature now, so you're saying that should be on the label.
Call your legislator, yeah. Call your legislator and ask them to support that bill.
Topical issue. Dr. Nitto?
I would say eat a lot of brightly colored fruits and vegetables, eat legumes, you know, whole grains, in your diet, try to avoid processed foods, trans fats, and other processed things, and you'll be a lot healthier.
All right. We could go
and
on.
And exercise.
And exercise. Don't forget.
Like you pointed out.
That's right. And don't watch TV celebrity chefs. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Dan Nitto, doctor and director of the diabetes program at York Hospital. He's co-author of The Color Code, A Revolutionary Eating Plan for Optimum Health. He's at work on a new book about the benefits of the all-vegan diet. Michael Noonan is a doctor of chiropractic, acupuncture, and other wellness therapies in Old Town. He writes a column for the Bangor Daily News. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Marcel Hutchins answered your calls, and we'd like to wish Marcel well as she moves on from Maine Calling and prepares to enter journalism school in the fall. Thanks for everything, Marcel, and good luck. John Keimel ran the board. We had help from Rich Tozier and the MPBN web team. And, of course, you can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcasts by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.